Hello, and welcome to the Three Worlds podcast number 21. See, they keep coming. When you least expect a new one, out it will pop. And this one, as it pops, will be all about music. Because if you've listened to any of the others, you probably realise that I like the stuff. So I'm sitting here, staring into a computer screen, watching my voice go into strange kind of lines and bumps on the oscilloscope of the recording program. Outside, it's getting slowly dark. It's been the most beautiful April day. Warm, sunny, hasn't been a cloud in the sky all day. It's been absolutely spectacular. And I just feel like spending a Sunday evening doing a nice podcast because it's about time I did. It's been a long time since I've actually found the time to do another one. So thank you for waiting, and here we go. Okay, I'm going to pick up a musical instrument off my desk. You will hear a bell, because there's a bell attached to the end of a piece of cord, and it's got ribbons and various other bits and pieces attached to it. And I'm going to put it into my mouth, and that is, as you probably realized, a jaw harp, sometimes called a Jew's harp, but jaw harp is more correct, and not just politically correct, it's more accurate. Jews don't actually play them, so, or let's put it this way, it's not a traditional Israeli instrument. It's a jaw harp, and that actual instrument that I was playing is a very old one, and it is actually a shaman's jaw harp from Tuva, in southern Siberia. And I'm going to talk really about the whole use of different sorts of musical instruments this time, just a kind of hodgepodge of different musical bits from around the world that are connected to shamanism. We had an article in Sacred Hoop magazine about 2 years ago about jaw harps, and that was really when my interest was first whetted about them. I knew that they were a shamanic instrument, and I had seen photographs and read accounts of shamans in Mongolia and Siberia in general using them in their practice, but I knew very little about it at that stage. And then we had this article, which was a very interesting article written by someone who really specialises in the playing of these things. And then I was sent one from my teacher. Jonathan Horvitz actually gave me one as a gift that he'd bought in Moscow, and it kind of turned up out of the blue. And that was a modern one from Tuva. That's actually here as well. It's got a better sound, but it's a new instrument. If you don't know what a jaw harp is, I'll describe one, and I'll stick a picture up too on the website. If you imagine a sort of U-shaped piece of iron or brass, the modern one that I just played is made of brass, U-shaped, and the top bits of the U are bent towards each other, and from the very bottom of the U there is a thin strip of metal, which is a sort of hard steel, which vibrates. And if I just vibrate it now, I don't even know if the microphone will pick it up, but this is just the thing vibrating outside of my mouth. Oh yeah, you can hear that. That's just a thin strip of metal vibrating in the middle of the jaw harp. And what you do is you rest the two prongs of the U shape against your teeth, and your mouth becomes a resonating chamber for the vibrations of that thin metal strip. So you just put it against your mouth and as you move your mouth around, the sound changes. I'm just moving my tongue and I'm moving the whole shape of my mouth. Okay, fun. Great fun. They're lovely to play because they're fun. But what's their role shamanically? What are they about? Well, from my own experience, I found that they're very mind-altering, really. They're very calming. They have a very sort of otherworldly effect on the person playing them. They're much more a solo individual instrument for yourself rather than a performance instrument, although of course they can be mic'd up. And I remember seeing a concert a few years ago of a group from Kyrgyzstan. Oh, why do these places always have such difficult names? Kyrgyzstan. They were using them some wonderful sort of long neck lutes as well, and they were real virtuosos. Wow, could they play them? Amazing. Unless you're going to kind of mic up, though, they're not really a sort of performance instrument. They're for yourself. If you ever play them, you will find that you go inside yourself. They really take you into a sort of a trance space that's actually similar to a shamanic journey space. It really alters your perception. And actually, I use them quite a lot, sort of just as a meditation instrument, really. But also, more recently, I've actually started playing them before I go on a journey if I feel that the shamanic journey that I've got to do is a kind of a more heavyweight one. If I need to kind of get into the zone, so to speak, before I actually embark on the journey, they're wonderful for that, because it's like by the time you've played one for a few minutes, you're half there anyway, and then I'll start to drum and I'll go into the journey that way. That's one of their uses. Outside in nature, they're fantastic just as a sort of meditation and an attuning tool. They really are excellent things. Now, the other use that they're put to in traditional shamanism is that very often, as I described mine right at the beginning of this recording, mine is hung with cords and streamers, and there's a bell on the end of one of the cords and all sorts of bits and pieces of cloth. And you very often see almost quite over-the-top displays of cloth hanging from the bottom of these instruments. And one of the things that they're actually used for is blessing and curing by the shaman. And this is done by the shaman goes into trance and calls his spirits with the jaw harp. They actually will go on a journey with it, in effect. They will be in an altered state of consciousness, communicating with their spirits and taken over by the spirits very often too, the Mongolian phrase for that being ongodarud, which is in effect it's spirit possession. And once the shaman is really in communication with their spirits, the jaw harp is an empowered object, and therefore it will be used as a sort of gentle whip. The patient will be hit by the cords that hang down from it, or they will be sort of wiped and cleansed with these things. And that's another traditional way that you could actually use one of these instruments in your healing. They're very lovely for that. They're also very, very lovely as methods of working with your intent. I sometimes use mine if I'm doing absent healing for someone. In effect, I will use the sound of the jaw harp as a sort of carrier wave for my intent to do healing or cleansing of that person. A friend of mine had a rather nasty accident with a very sharp tool in a wood that he was doing some work in, and she wasn't paying very much attention and almost sliced off two of her fingers, and she had to have her fingers pinned with tiny little bits of surgical steel and all sorts of things. And then eventually these had to come out. And one of the things that I did with the jaw harp before that was to actually play them out, use the vibration of the instrument with my intent and the aid of my spirits to actually, in effect, loosen these bits of surgical steel that were down the length of her finger. And they came out beautifully. Now, perhaps they would have come out beautifully anyway. I expect they would. But it was still a nice, intentful thing to do, and using the jaw harp that way. I suggest with any musical instrument that you actually get, like a drum or a rattle or a jaw harp, however you sort of, you know, whatever you read about or pick up from other people, you have to tune into the instrument yourself. You really got to kind of work with its spirit, and of course that's one of the journeys that you can actually make too. You can actually journey to the spirit of the instrument too, if you're familiar with the process of shamanic journeying. But the instrument has to sort of work with you, and you will find your own unique ways of working with it and find different methods of actually sort of employing it in your practice. They're easy to get. You can get modern ones. Music shops will sell them. They're going to cost you probably less than sort of $10 for a very bog standard basic one, £7 or £8. If you want to get a better one, you can look around. eBay is actually quite a good place for them, believe it or not. And there are a lot of companies on eBay that are selling ones made in the former Soviet Republic, and, you know, places like Tuva and sort of southern Siberia in general. And, you know, you don't need to buy an old one. It's nice if you've got an old one, but it's not essential. The main thing is that it actually sounds and works okay and plays. And then kind of work with it, get experienced with it. They're not difficult to play. You know, just sort of put it against your mouth and play around with it, and you'll soon find that you can make a sound with it. It doesn't hurt your teeth. Some people have said to me, you can't do that, it'll break your teeth. But it doesn't. It really has no effect on your teeth at all. Except I will admit that once I had a broken tooth, unbeknown to me, it was nothing to do with the jaw harp. I had found a chunk of rock in a cake and crunched down on it, and you know how you sometimes break a tooth and it's cracked. It's like there's a crack in my tooth, which, you know, I didn't know that it was broken at all, but the jaw harp found it, because I couldn't play the jaw harp for a while until the dentist had actually solved it for me, because it made the two halves of the teeth vibrate. And it didn't exactly hurt, but it was really uncomfortable, and I didn't know what the hell was going on, because as far as I was concerned, I didn't have a cracked tooth or any problem with it. And it was only when the dentist actually sort of dealt with that tooth that the jaw harp vibration didn't make me feel uncomfortable again. But that's obviously a very natural thing. I mean, it does vibrate, and if you've got a broken tooth like that, yeah, it's going to kind of feel strange in your mouth. But they're lovely. Get them, and you know, you can tie bits of cloth to it. You can do all of those bits and pieces and experiment with it. They're lovely instruments, and they're not very widely known in shamanic circles. I've introduced the jaw harp to several people now, and all of them have actually discovered that it's become a major part of their shamanic practice. They really, really are good, and I guess lots and lots of generations of Siberian shamans, well, I guess they knew a thing or two, because they kind of sussed out that these were neat things too. So follow their example. They are neat things. All right, I'm going to play you another piece of music. This isn't me playing. And we're going to move location somewhat, and definitely move sound world a bit. So have a listen to this and see what you think of it. Thank you. Now that was a piece of music, a song from Morocco in North Africa, and you're kind of thinking, I know, well, what's shamanic about that? But actually it is. That's a piece of music from an Islamic form of shamanism called the Nawa. G-N-A-W-A. Nawa. Traditions of Morocco. And it's played on a bass lute, which has got three or sometimes four strings. And the lute is called a gimbra or gimbri or sentri. And it's also played with some iron castanets, which are called kwakabeb. And you hold those one in each hand and you sort of play them, and they're very heavy and they're very loud. They're enormously loud. I have a pair of those, and I have one of the lutes as well. And I enjoy playing around and recording with them and playing them from time to time. And the castanets hurt your hands. They are so heavy, and you know, the people who play them kind of traditionally, God, they must have such strong hands. They really are hard to play. They hurt me. You know, as a musician, I've got lots of sort of muscles in hands that, you know, a lot of people kind of don't generate, because, you know, as a musician, you move your fingers in all sorts of ways that most people don't. So I've got quite strong hands, but by God, those kwakabeb hurt. And as I say, they're enormously loud. Okay, so Nawa music. The Nawa is a spiritual tradition in Morocco. You get the musicians out in the streets in sort of daytime doing tourist performances, but the actual music itself came up with slaves from more southern areas of Africa, probably from Mali and places like that. Several centuries ago, the Moroccan people actually had the Mali people as slaves, and because the tradition came up with them, and Morocco is an Islamic country, they kind of merged their own spiritual traditions with Islam. And now you have this incredible musical form, which you can kind of think of the original drum and bass, if you like, where they sing all night. They have all-night ceremonies, and they are singing to the spirits of the desert, the jinn. And each of the songs calls a specific jinn, and the people who are performing the music play it for dancers who will be taken over by the jinn, and they will perform healing ceremonies. The dancers go into another state of consciousness. They may not shamanically journey, but they are absolutely possessed by the spirits of the desert, by these jinn, and they perform healings and, you know, do all sorts of bits and pieces like that in these all-night ceremonies. Each jinn desires particular perfumes and particular colours, so the dancers have to wear the costumes in the particular jinn's colour, and they have to spray perfume of a particular scent to attract the jinn in order for them to be taken over by it. It's quite a fascinating tradition. I did some research on it some years ago, and I wrote an in-house article for Sacred Hoop magazine, which I'll put up on the Three Worlds website. I'll go a link for that at the end, and it may actually be there already. I'm not completely sure. I will pause the recording in a minute and check on the internet. You can sort of you can read my article about it. I love the music. I absolutely love the sound of those bass lutes. I mean, they really kind of do something to me. I'm very, 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 very fond of North African music in general, actually. And that kind of combination of the kwakwabebe, the castanets, and the bass lute kind of just makes my spine tingle. I love it. Very different form of shamanism. But I wanted to kind of use it because it really is a shamanic music. You can still play the instrument as a sort of in a secular, non-shamanic way. It's pretty boring as an instrument, I gotta say. It's like you can't pick out tunes on it. They're not very easy to play either, as lutes go. They're just basically used for playing sort of bass runs. They have a lovely sound, and it is an absolutely shamanic use. Okay, so that was North Africa. This is just going to be a kind of fun pop around the world, look at different sort of shamanic bits of music podcast. Not terribly in depth, really, but I hope you'll enjoy it. And we're going to go off somewhere else now. So this is another piece of shamanic music from another culture on another continent. That was shamanic music from Korea, and it's a sort of music called Sinoi. It's performed on the hourglass drums and flutes, and also quite often a sort of dulcimer, which is called Kagoem. I believe I've pronounced that right. I probably haven't. Plucked dulcimer. It's sort of described as a sort of stately dance, and it's a sort of warm-up for the shaman to go into trance. Very different. I guess part of what I'm trying to do on this podcast is to demonstrate some of the wide-ranging musical forms that are available around the world in shamanism. I mean, we're all very familiar with the use of the drum and the rattle and song too. But there are many, many other forms of music which have a transcendental, is that the right word? It'll do. Yes, transcendental sort of form to it. Trance-inducing is probably better, and that's one of them. I do have to say it kind of doesn't do it for me. I've never quite managed to get on with the music of the Far East, China and Japan and places like that. It's just never kind of grabbed me as a musical tradition. I've never particularly enjoyed it. Give me North African any day. but it's a very otherworldly sort of music, and I guess I can see how it would work. And probably when you're there with the musicians and they've been playing for quite some time, then yeah, I could understand it. I guess the essence of any shamanic music is actually monotony. If you make it boring enough, people go into trance. I mean, I jest, but in essence, that's true. It's repetitive phrases in music. The bass lines of the Gimbra lutes in the noir music is very much a repeated pattern. And there's that sort of repeated pattern too that's happening with the percussion and the sort of the way that the music kind of continues on in that kind of way with the Korean music. It's very much that sort of repeated pattern, and that does do things to the brain. Anything that is sort of monotonous does tend to put us into trance. So monotony is very much used in that way within shamanic music. So I think, you know, what I've really done today is try to show some of the music that is less sort of usual within shamanism. And there's no reason why you can't experiment yourself. I mean, the Jaws harp that we started the podcast with is a very sort of internal instrument anyway, so it does very naturally put you in a trance. But if you are a musician of any sort, try actually playing with your musical instrument in that kind of slightly repetitive way. Use it as a sort of vehicle for inducing a trance for yourself. And if you get the opportunity, try playing outside. One of the things that I actually really enjoy doing is playing music in my garden. And I will quite often go and play, invariably, I tend to play a medieval instrument, or I play an oud. Out there, because those are the instruments that I kind of gravitate to as I'm sort of wanting to play something. But I find that actually kind of, although on one level I'm busy playing the instrument, another part of me is sort of almost dialoguing with the natural world. And I had the most strange experience once with a harp. I have a medieval harp which I took outside. And it was a windy day, and the weather was particularly sort of strange. It was warm and windy and quite stormy, but there wasn't any rain around. But it kind of felt like it could at any time. And I sat there and I played the harp, and the wind joined in with me. And it played it too, like an Aeolian harp. And that was weird. That was really strange experience. I can explain it away on a sort of logical level of, yes, I was playing the harp and the wind was blowing the strings. And on that mundane, dead matter thinking way of explaining it, yeah, sure. But I was there and I was playing and the wind was playing with me. And I went sideways. My consciousness went strange. It was a very unusual experience for me, and I think, you know, that sort of thing can happen if you are actually wanting to work with music in that way. Just try it. Just try doing it if you're a musician. You know, if you play a guitar or if you play a fiddle or whatever, let the music come through you. I don't read music. I've never learned to read music. And I do have to say I've got a lot of musician friends that do read music. And I think the reading of music actually is a bad thing. There, that's controversial, isn't it? I say it's a bad thing because I think it can kill the improvising part of the person. I really have met people who cannot actually just pick up an instrument and play it. They can only do it if there's music in front of them. And I think if you can be with your instrument in a way that is natural and spontaneous. I mean, I improvise an awful lot. Almost everything that I play, I improvise. And not the recordings, obviously, but, well, a lot of those start as improvisations too. But you go into a different space. You really do go into a kind of different way of thinking, different way of being. If you're kind of tuning into the music and letting it come out of you. And I think if you're doing that with an instrument, with an inkling of shamanic trance anyway, you kind of vaguely have some perception of being in an altered space, then I think you can do it in a more conscious way. So that's something perhaps those of you who are musicians, you could have a go at doing. Just play with it. I guess that's how all of these musical traditions started. And, you know, we're no different to people 40,000 years ago, 20,000 years ago, 10,000 years ago, 2,000 years ago. We're just people. And we're great. People are just, they blow me away, really. I mean, they're just amazing. Oh, shut up, Nicholas. I've gone on too much. I think it's probably, at this point, time to call it a pod. And I'll do my normal twittering on about various other bits and pieces. Oh, that reminds me. Yes, I'm on Twitter. Okay. Should you wish to follow me on Twitter, I am Nick the Breeze. NickTheBreeze. Nick the Breeze. If you're not familiar with Twitter, you won't have the foggiest of what I'm on about. That's fine. If you do, come and follow me. And also, if you're on Twitter, you might like to know that I recently started a Twibe. So there is a Twibe called Shamanism. I like Twitter. I'm very active on Twitter. It appeals to my trivialness. So if there are any other Twitter heads out there, come and link up and follow. And if you haven't the foggiest what I'm on about with Twitter, Google it. Find out about it. It's good fun. And you too can be trivial. All right, links. First of all, thanks for all the emails. I've had loads of emails saying, is there going to be another podcast? And the answer to that is yes. And here is the proof. And there will be more. There will be more. They will happen when I have time. I know it sounds feeble, but I really am very busy with other bits and pieces with the magazine and stuff. And it just eats my time up. And I don't get to do podcasts as often as I would like. But stay tuned, as it were. You will get more. So thank you for all your emails. I really do appreciate it. My email address, nick@sacredhoop.org. My websites, various ones. Sacred Hoop magazine is www.sacredhoop.org. And I've talked about the magazine in other podcasts, so I'm not going to go on about it. We still love subscribers. Remember that if you want to be an e-subscriber and get a PDF of the magazine sent to you, the offer page is still working, and you can get a PDF version of the magazine for £7.50 instead of the normal price of £10. That's, of course, for a year's subscription. That's four issues of the magazine. And remember that that is on a secret page of the Sacred Hoop website. You've got to get to it through that. And the page that you've got to put into your browser is www.sacredhoop.org/offer.html. That will take you to a page that doesn't have any other links to it. And there you will be able to get a cheap electronic subscription to the magazine. Sorry, can't do it for paper ones because it costs us too much in postage, but emails are free. So if you want a PDF one, then you can get it for 25% off. And again, because the pound is so low against the dollar and the euro, it's quite considerably cheaper for those of you who live outside of the UK to subscribe. It's about, about a third cheaper or so than it was a year ago. So good time for you to do it. Okay, other websites. This podcast has its own website on my antique ritual objects gallery website, which is www.threeworlds.co.uk. I talked earlier about articles. Okay, now if you go to the Three Worlds website, and that's number three, not the word three, so it's numeral3worlds.co.uk. Go to that website, and in the left-hand menu, you will see that there is a page called Articles. Now, if you go to that page, you'll see a whole load of articles written by me and by other people about different aspects of shamanism. And there's an article there that I wrote a while back about the djinn. So you can have a read of that if you want to learn more about the djinn. And if you want to learn about the Noir traditions of North Africa, of Morocco, the article that I referred to is already up. But it's not on the Three Worlds website. It's on my own website, my craft website. And that is www.nicholaswood.net. So if you go to www.nicholaswood.net, and again, when the front page is loaded, you can click on the side menu on the page that says Articles. And there you will find some other articles. There's some duplicates with the ones on the Three Worlds ones as well, but I think there might be a couple there that are not on the Three Worlds, one of them being the article that I wrote about the Noir traditions of Morocco. So if you want to read up about that, and of course you can Google, I mean, Wiki has got a page on it, and there's various other bits and pieces. I love that music, and it's a really nice and interesting tradition, so you might want to check that out. So I think that probably just about covers it. We'll end with another piece of music, and this is not shamanic music, but it is kind of, well, I suppose, got a certain kind of sacredness to it. This is, those of you who listen to other podcasts, you know I like medieval music too, so I'm going to end with a Cantiga de Santa Maria. This is a piece of music from the collection of King Alfonso el Sabio from Castile, Alfonso X of Castile. He compiled or possibly even wrote some of these songs. They date from about 1260, and they are a wonderful collection of about 350 or thereabouts songs about miracles of the Virgin Mary. And this was kind of the period of medieval history where the Virgin Mary was really pretty much equivalent to an earth goddess, and she was a very popular figure. This is not kind of high church stuff. This is fun stories of the Virgin. Things like, there's one story about a knight whose stoat died and he got terribly upset, so he prayed to the Virgin and the Virgin made the stoat come alive. You know, it's kind of not deep stuff, but it's great music. Be back soon with another podcast, promise. Keep waiting, keep pestering me with emails. They do help. It makes me feel guilty, and then I actually kind of pull my finger out and plug in the microphone. All right, thanks for listening. Take care. Bye.
Con meu
if you've sat through that and enjoyed it, you deserve to know what it was. That was a rendition of Cantiga Santa Maria number 323, and it's a song all about a statue that has miraculous healing powers. It was performed by the group Symphony, Paula Chateauneuf on oud, Stevie Wishart on medieval fiddle, Jim Denley on percussion, Vivian Ellis on vocals, and the lead vocal was a Spanish lady, I'm afraid I can't remember the name of. They're a part Australian, part English group. They've now actually disbanded, unfortunately. I had the opportunity to play with them informally several times. It was a great experience, and I was taught drum technique by Jim. They produce various albums. That one, I believe, was it's an album of Cantigas, and I believe it's called Poda a Santa Maria. But if you look up Symphony, spelt S-I-N-F-O-N-Y-E, Symphony, it's a medieval word for a hurdy-gurdy. If you look them up, Google it, and you'll see their albums. I hope you enjoyed it. I think it's a fabulous piece of music. Bye.